You know, it's kind of, where he is an owner that does what my clients want owners to do. And my clients are the kind of players that an owner would want to do what he wants to do. So there's a common, certainly a common thread that exists between my clients and what Steve's intentions are.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, November the 10th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and don't forget the newsletter. Would love for you to become a subscriber, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Happy Sunday, first week of the hot stove in the books. The GM meetings is in the bank. The winter meetings not too far away, less than a month away. The holidays are upon us. We finally got a little chill on the pumpkin, as they say here on a Sunday in New York, and I'm excited to be with everybody. Hope everybody's doing well. We are now firmly putting the 2024 season in the rearview mirror. Had a lot of fun getting back on the air, talking to you about where the Mets are and Juan Soto. And look, we'll start off here. Joining me in just a little bit, one of my favorites. If you guys are not a subscriber of The Athletic, you really should be. They got great deals over there. Again, I always like to point out, I'm not getting paid to tell you. I'm just telling you, it's a good resource. Will Salmon of The Athletic, Mets beat reporter. You see him on SNY's Baseball Night in New York. He'll be joining us. He'll be on the phone in the Talking Mets studio, and we will be discussing all things Mets, Juan Soto, the pitching, rumors about acquiring pitching, maybe even some value stuff that goes on around the Mets. Now, remember, Will also was a beat reporter at one point for The Athletic for the Milwaukee Brewers, so he might have some thoughts on Willy Adames. We'll see what he has to say there, but Will Salmon will be joining us in just a little bit. And I wanted to kick off with some fun news for you guys, and this is a great event. And I really think you guys should, if you have the time, on December 7th, go check it out. I'm making sure I give you the right day. Yes, December 7th. But for some of you, you guys have been to the Queens Baseball Convention. And this year, there's a ton of interesting participants. Turk Wendell's going to be there. Greg Jeffries, who was one of the first prospects that everybody fell in love with back in the day. Ray Knight's going to be there. Jose Reyes is going to be there. So there's going to be a lot going on. But yours truly will be there, Mike Silva. And I am not there to sign autographs, as much as I know that that's probably what you were asking. But I will be part in the afternoon at about 1 o'clock, the State of the Mets panel that Mark Healy, our friend over at Gotham Baseball, hosts. And we'll be talking from an independent perspective, our thoughts on the Mets, for about an hour. Good friend Anthony Rivera, Subway to Shea, will be there. I'm sure there'll be others. I don't want to speak out of turn here who's going to be on the panel. I'm not putting it together. But I have been selected. I'm honored to have been selected by the good folks that, Mark, who runs the panel, and obviously is tight with the guys over at the Queens Baseball Convention. So excited to be there on December 7th, getting to see, hopefully, some of you that are loyal listeners to the show. Put a maybe a face to an email, a face to a voice. Maybe you called in during the Twitter spaces. So I wanted to kick off with that fun, exciting news. I was on a panel for the Queens Baseball Convention, I think in 2013, 14 when they used to have it at McFadden. So it's been a while. That's when I was on Champions Radio, ESPN. So I was part of that panel. It's been 10 years, so it's been a while. And I'm excited to be a part of it, getting to see people, getting to talk to people. And really, it's right before the winter meeting. So it's almost like a precursor to what hopefully will be a really big week in baseball. So before we get to Will Salmon, here's what we do over at the Talking Mets podcast. And I've said it to you last week. We started the offseason, this particular offseason, throwing down the gauntlet about the Mets and Cohen and how the Mets have an opportunity to leverage the 2024 season in a way that historically this organization has not been able to leverage. It's always been kind of a fun one and done and then back to, you know, reality. But very quickly, as you can see, and we do educated we're up front. This is educated speculation. We take the commentaries from Stearns. We take the commentaries from the media. And we start to formulate an opinion about what's going to happen here when all things start to break. So clearly, early on here, I mean, the Mets and their desire to be in the deep end of the pool. Well, Steve Cohen is going out to meet with Scott Boras. So right there, at this point, they're showing their desire to be at that point in the pool. And whether it be John Heyman, Buster Olney, who's a big Mets critic, Jeff Passan, all the respected voices, in an environment where I think the insider game has started to become extinct to a certain degree, not to the same level it used to be, for a variety of reasons, that's not the point of the conversation. When guys who are the insiders, who are left, really the insiders, those who are clued in with both the agenting and the front office side of the business in a big time way, are telling you, expect big things from the Mets this winter. Unless Cohen and Stearns completely strike out, completely bungle this thing, and I'd find that hard to believe, or something unforeseen is happening, I think we're in store for a really exciting winter. I think the Mets' desire, Cohen's desire, is to take this 2024 good vibes and enhance it, play in that deep end of the pool. You've got, obviously, Soto, now Roki Sasaki. That'll be an interesting situation, maybe a trade. So it'll be really fun to see how this thing is going, and the fact that we're all going to be here together makes it even better for us here. I think, really, where we're going to go is there's going to be the Soto part of the offseason that may hold up things a little bit, not to say, and this is the big point here with this current Mets ownership group in front office. In the old days, they could only do one thing at a time. It was a moving budget. So if Will Pons wanted to get involved in Soto, and they weren't going to get involved in Soto with that kind of commitment, that was all that front office was going to be able to do, and then they would figure out the roster after. And although Soto is a generational player, we talked about that last week, you could listen to that show, and he's going to improve the Mets offense just by his presence. This isn't the NBA. You're not going to have LeBron James come in and then, all right, we'll figure the rest out because he's LeBron James. Baseball's different. So they'll be working on other aspects of the business and then be able to pivot very quickly. But I think Soto is that first domino. And like I said last week, I think the Mets have a great shot. A lot of people, I mean, even John Middleton, the owner of the Phillies, talked about it. In an interview about how he thought Soto wanted to play in New York, even though the Phillies are involved in it. Clearly, Boras is going to dispute that. He's going to try to get as many teams as possible involved. I do laugh when, and this is where the hot stove gets bananas, where you hear, well, the Rays are checking in on Juan Soto. Well, I'm checking in on an Ashton Martin, but that doesn't mean I have the money for it. I don't know how that's going to work. What are they? I know they have a new ballpark coming in a couple of years. Maybe Stu Sternberg has some cash lying around. I'm not sure the validity of what goes on in Tampa Bay is what Soto's going to want for 15 years of his career. But when you really factor in the Ohtani money being deferred and the true value of that contract and Soto's offensive performance over the course of the first 6 or 7 years of his career, it's really a no-brainer that you'd invest that kind of money. And I don't see why the Mets, from a money standpoint, won't be at the top of the list. Now, David Sampson, who used to be an executive for the Marlins and the son-in-law of Jeffrey Loria, who was the owner, has a podcast, and I know Sampson is a guy that elicits some eye rolls from those in the audience, but he's been in the room in big free agent acquisitions. You know, they went after that one-off season, if you remember, when they signed Jose Reyes and they brought in Heath Bell And they started to actually spend money. I think it was 2011 or 2012. They went after Albert Pujols, and they almost landed Albert Pujols. So he knows a little bit about being in the room and recruiting a big fish free agent. And he made a great point. What Boris and Soto want to hear is less about the money, because they know the money's going to be there. And it's more about what the Mets are going to do from a standpoint of the organization to win. And Cohen selling him on that vision and selling him, especially in this particular organization, this particular negotiation, selling him on why making the move from the Bronx to Queens for pretty much the rest of his career makes sense with the history of the Yankees, with the fact that the Yankees won a pennant, the fact that historically the Yankees are the better bet to be able to be functional and to be able to spend the money to put the players around Soto so that he could get his ring. He could have what A-Rod had in 2009 and, you know, maybe have a run, albeit it'll be very hard with the way that the playoffs is set up now, like the guys like Jeter and Bernie Williams and Posada and Andy Pettit had in the 90s. That's what the Mets are up against right now. And, you know, Cohen has some connections and abilities to open up worlds, I think, in the business and finance world that Hal Steinbrenner doesn't. But when you're wealthy like Soto will be and you have an agent like Scott Boras, those are things that you probably could do anyway. So it will be interesting. And if you listen to Samson's podcast, it will be interesting how Cohen, who's going out there to meet with Boras, and there are a couple other free agents that are on the list, but you as an owner don't go out to meet with an agent to talk about Sean Manaea or to, you know, maybe you talk about Pete Alonso for sure. But even then, you know, those are things that can be handled by your GM. Your GM obviously is setting things up on a tee. But when you get into generational contracts, like I had said last week, that's why the owner is going out there. So this is just the beginning of what will probably be a 4 to 6 week process. There are some in the media that believe it'll be a very slow offseason. Boris, as always, controls the pace because of the kind of clients he has. He had a tough offseason. Criticism came out to him from the likes of Jordan Montgomery. Blake Snell got off to a bad start. So you know Boris is a competitive guy. He's a titan in the industry. I don't think he's over the hill. We'll you know, maybe some things happen with those particular players. But I think this offseason, Boris is going to come back in a big way. And I also don't think players, even though things will probably slow down in the sense where if you're not in that top of the free agent starting pitching market or Soto, Alonso, or some of those bigger players, things might clog up for you till after the winter meetings. Now, some people might jump in and take a contract. It's not like they're not going to have conversations and negotiations. And that's where this challenge is for the Mets. How do they manage multiple plans, multiple priorities? Because if Soto doesn't sign, I'm not saying the Mets offseason is a failure, bitterly disappointing, but how do they pivot and improve the offense? Does it change their philosophy on the pitching side? Because everybody's tying Stearns in with Corbin Burns because of their connection in Milwaukee. I'm not so sure. I'm not convinced. And I didn't hear anything from Stearns on his conversations during the GM meetings. Because remember, last year we learned a lot about Stearns year one with his conversations in the scrum during the GM meetings. I didn't hear anything that made me think they were opposed to going after a Burns or a Fried or maybe even a Blake Snell. But I didn't feel, as he talked about responsibly spending Cohen's money, that he's just going to go out and throw a 7-year contract at a pitcher. And personally, that's the part of this whole offseason that will be fascinating, because if you miss out on Soto, you could still put together, because you do have a solid offense, but do you focus more on pitching? And right now, those top three in the market, and Burns is the one that I think gets the most connection to the Mets, require probably very long-term deals. And because of their position within the starting pitching ranking, I mean, a Burns is going to want $36 to $40 million, probably for 7 years. He's going to want to be paid like a Scherzer or Verlander gets paid, or close to it, even though we're not sure if he's a Hall of Famer. And right now, when you just saw the Mets unwind from those $43 million broken down pitcher AAVs that clogged up their payroll, clogged up their roster because of that, do you want to jump back in there? Now, Sasaki's different. The Sasaki situation is going to be actually fascinating because he's not about money. So if you look, I'm against them going at the top of the market. I would rather them shop with potentially bringing back Severino and Manaea. You have Eovaldi out there. you have some options. And with Michael Walker getting a contract, you know, that to me shows you that the pitching market could get a little bit crazy really quick. There's a couple of guys that are interesting but have qualifying offers. Martinez and Pivetta. Stearns just took over the farm system a year ago. Does he want to give up a draft pick for guys who are good but not great? A guy like Yusei Kikuchi, interesting arm. From, you know, always an arm that the Mets were interested in when Billy Epler was around a couple of years ago. Had a great second half in Houston. Maybe that's the guy to get involved with. Walker Buehler, coming off an injury, all of a sudden looks like he found his stuff against the Mets and the Yankees in the later in the postseason. Can they steal him away from the Dodgers? And really, that's another part of this whole thing, because you add Sasaki in, who is more about a recruitment and a long-term play like Ohtani was with Anaheim. And it'll be interesting if the Mets, because they don't, depending on how the international money comes down, they do it in 2024. The Mets don't have a lot of money to offer them. It's all about opportunity. You know, how do the Mets fit into that? And right now the Dodgers, and this plays for Soto, this plays for the pitching, this plays on many fronts. They're a lot like how the Heat were with Riley and LeBron, or how the Lakers were when Riley was there, and the Bulls with Jordan. They're a desirable destination. Good players want to play with them. And as they get deeper and deeper into their run, everybody wants to join the band because winning's exciting. LA's a sexy place to be. And it makes it very difficult, no matter what you can offer here, if you're Cohen, to compete with that. You're in the midst of a possible Dodger dynasty. That's how good I think they are. That's how well run they are. That's how much of an advantage they have, especially in the Japanese market with Ohtani. I know the Mets have Senga. Believe it or not, there is a connection with Sasaki, with Masato Yoshi, the manager over there, who's not, you know, a Met that many of you don't realize. He was a decent fifth starter. Maybe at times pitched better than that during the late 90s under Bobby Valentine. He was part of the 99 team that was in that great series against the Braves. So there's some connections there. But look, that's about recruitment. And so far, yeah, the Mets recruited Max Scherzer. They recruited Justin Verlander. They showed that they have made improvements in that area, and they can close the big fish. But they lost out on Yamamoto. They lost out on Trevor Bauer. That's a good thing, a lot of people are going to say. They lost that. You know, they potentially, at this point, their biggest chase for an international player, Yamamoto, ended with them finishing second or third, depending on reports about how serious he was about the Yankees. So the Mets have some stuff to prove here, and it's going to take recruitment. It's going to take a situation where Cohen's going to have to be, like Samson said, more than just I could pay you the most money. That just gets you to the table. But I think my plan would be really going after Soto, and then if you want, pivot, because I heard the Adamas rumors, and I'd love to say Adamas with Pete, with Soto, is a good threesome to really beef up that offense, get it to that north of 5 runs a game. And I'm okay with spending that kind of money, depending on what the Adamas contract is. Does he want to play third base? It's very Carlos Correa-esque, that strategy. Moves Vientos to the DH spot. And then maybe, because an Adamas contract with his offense, I think is less risky than bringing in a Burns, and maybe he's getting hurt a year and a half, 2 years into it, and you have all this dead money, because you just don't know. Same thing with Fried, and same thing with Snell. And then what you do is you beef up the offense. You go out there and you solidify a lot of these quality B starters, like I mentioned, like Manaea, maybe Eovaldi, bring back Severino. It sounded like Stearns really likes Severino and wants to bring him back. And at that point, maybe you explore the trade market as well. Now, that's where the other part of this goes into play, because you're looking at the pitching from a different standpoint. That's where then you go to the trade market and is a Framber Valdez, who's a free agent, potentially going to be available? Will Jordan Montgomery or Sonny Gray, because their teams want to shed their payroll, become available? Can you get them for a reasonable price? And then Stearns has to balance, and the big name is Garrett Crochet, who I'm not sold on. And I know everybody loves Luis Robert, guy with power, plays a good center fielder, but strikes out a ton. I mean, maybe that combination, Robert and Crochet, it does make a ton of sense. But Stearns has the challenge here of trying to figure out which of these prospects that he's seen now for a year, during a year where some of them were injured for significant portions of the season, which one of these do you want to trade if you're going to acquire a quality pitcher? Now, the White Sox want positional players. That includes guys like Beatty and Mauricio and Jet Williams and Drew Gilbert. Maybe somebody that is lower level in the minor leagues that we're not talking about, like a Jeremy Rodriguez. And, you know, they did have a draft, so they do have some other guys coming in. But everybody talks about Jared Kelnick and what happened with Diaz and Kelnick. Kelnick was a known quantity, even though there was some skepticism about certain things about him in the Mets organization, things that weren't talked about as much because the industry, by wide and large, liked Kelnick as the best prospect in the league in baseball. But you got lucky there a little bit. That could have went a lot worse, even though I always say Kelnick for Diaz, because of Diaz's control and age and standing as a closer, wasn't as bad as everybody thinks. The Mets wound up keeping Andrés Giménez in that deal, and they wound up trading him for Lindor, and that's worked out. So it can work out. You can get deals where it works out, where Giménez fits what Cleveland wants. The Mets got Lindor in that case. Now, I'm not suggesting Crochet is at the level of Lindor, but that's really where you have to think about it. And you have a guy coming from a losing environment, a guy that has a funky delivery, a guy that's had an injury history, a guy that barely pitches five innings, doesn't even really average five innings. So if you're going after him and you're giving up a haul, you better make sure if you throw a Jet Williams in there, you're not throwing in the next Trey Turner. You got to be careful. And this is what Stearns is paid for, and this is what's going to be interesting. Because the way it looks right now, you don't have a generational player outside of Soto. If you lose out on Soto, you're going to have to develop those guys from within. You'll have a lot of very good offensive players that you could go after, which you should go after even if you land Soto and Alonso and Adames. Then you have a lot of very good pitchers. And even the guys at the top of the market, Burns and Fried and Snell, who are aces, come with some questions about durability and long-term health. And I think the model really going forward is you're going to have to pay big money for big-time players, no matter who they are. But I'd be more inclined to take the risk on the positional player and try to churn and burn my pitchers. And as Stearns proved during the past season, you could get value here and find exactly what you need on guys that may be looking to do a rebound, which he said he would do. So ultimately, it'll be an interesting offseason, and the plan that I support is one where you beef up the offense, you go a little bit more B-level quality starters, quantity of starters. You have a couple of guys in Sproat and Tidwell that may be able to join the rotation. You have Buto. You know, these are guys, you do have some pitching depth coming up. And stay away right now from the big-name pitching free agents. Be a little bit cautious about who you give up to acquire a starter. I think that that's something they're going to do. And then the one thing I think Stearns really has to think about is how is he going to get some help for Edwin Diaz at the back end of that bullpen where, basically he's not the only closer. Devin Williams' name has come up. You know, obviously, you could David Robertson's a name that I like, Kirby Yates, Estevez, Tanner Scott. I mean, are these guys willing to take a contract? And you have to be careful because you have to also probably pay them close to what they could get as a closer somewhere else. And is the sport evolving enough where you could sell these guys on, hey, we're really not just looking to have a closer. We're looking at leverage situations. Diaz could get an eighth inning. You could get a ninth inning. You're not always going to be the setup guy. Now, that's the other thing. Yeah, and they know this. They've really never talked about this. How prepared is Diaz to be that high leverage guy that doesn't come in the ninth inning and needs to get outs in the seventh or eighth inning at times as the bullpen evolves, as it evolves into the more of the analytically minded type of manager, where I think Mendoza is a guy that gets the balance there. So that's where I think, listening to Stearns, I'm not sure that he's going to be going after the big name pitchers. I think the trade market's going to be interesting. Crochet's name keeps coming up, and he'll continue to shop for value for this 5, 6, 7, 8, parts of the bullpen where they could find guys, and they've already started doing that, obviously bringing some of their own arms up for the minor leagues. But you need that certainty there, and then beef up the offense. I mean, an offseason that sees you bring in Soto, Alonso back, and maybe beef it up with an Adames acquisition is interesting. It's definitely interesting. So let's see what Will Salmon has to say. He's a guy that covers the team. He obviously covered the Brewers for a little bit, knows David Stearns a little bit. Curious his thoughts. We'll get into that and much more right after this.
When
Scott
you say he brings billions to the franchise wherever he goes, what are the revenue streams that you're considering?
Well, I think the fact that when you have something that no one else has in the player community, in the talent arena, you have the jewel, you have the Mona Lisa of the museum, you have the attraction, you also have somebody that allows for owners to win repeatedly. And when owners win repeatedly, their revenues skyrocket. They develop the impact of postseason play on attendance, on rights, and in the streaming world, what those rights may mean. All of those things are going to generate that. Plus the international branding of being the one of the greats. And yet, he has literally 15 years more of his prime to offer.
We're back, and joining me, you guys know him, Will Salmon, at Will Salmon on X. He covers the Mets for The Athletic, does great work. You also see him on Baseball Night New York. And Will, welcome to the program. And I know that it seems like the Mets season just ended like 5 minutes ago, but here we are, and many of the pundits feel that this is going to be one of the more dynamic off seasons overall. The Mets will be at the top of the market on that. Usually when there's smoke, there's fire, when everybody feels a certain way or the industry feels a certain way. So are you braced and ready to go after a long postseason run there that you were covering?
Yeah, of course. First, thanks for having me on. I always enjoy the conversation with you. So it's a pleasure to talk with you again. Yeah, man, I'm ready for it. I always look forward to covering the offseason. It's probably my favorite part of covering baseball, actually. I really enjoy it. So I'm geared up, ready to go. And I think that you used a pretty good word there with dynamic, because I don't know how many other teams have as many holes to kind of fill as the Mets, and they could go in a bunch of different ways and they could take some different paths to fulfill those. And they're coming off a excellent, successful season with some really good stability and some really good management in place right now. So yeah, I think dynamic is a great word for it.
And the thing is, obviously, industry always likes to gossip and talk, and David Stearns did things a certain way in Milwaukee. And you heard him, you were there. He talked about having access to the entire player universe. But this will be a little bit different for David Stearns, because I don't think he's had the ability in his career. And he could have last year, but it was a different type of roster philosophy. He was getting to learn the organization to swim in this big fish end of the pool. So I wonder, the Mets are very tight with information leaking. I wonder if we really truly know what direction this team is going.
Well, I think that having access to every single possible player, and also having like this idea that they're going to have this checkbook and just sign everybody who's at the top of the market, I'm not sure if both of those thoughts align as much as some people kind of ran crazy with that line about the access to everybody. I wouldn't be surprised if they were pretty selective with who they go after here, just because of like what you mentioned with who's in charge. And not for nothing, but like that's always been kind of the case the last couple of years, actually, with just who they've kind of targeted. I'm not, like last year, for instance, it was all Yamamoto as far as top of the market goes, as you know, and they didn't really pursue anybody else who was like a top tier free agent. They clearly explored some other opportunities that may have not worked out for whatever reason, but Yamamoto was the key guy. Right now, I'm not sure. It's still kind of early to say like how many players are out there that are at the top of the market that they're going to really go after. Clearly, we know that Juan Soto is that guy. Steve Cohen is going to head out to California to visit with him and Scott Boras next week. So that's an obvious one. But aside from him, it's not too certain yet where they lie as far as how aggressive they'll go after some of these guys.
When you look at Soto, and obviously you can use all different metrics and debate. Mets have a top five, top 10. I know people want to argue, but the stats are there, and Francisco Lindor on their roster. The rest of their roster, they have very good players, but not that top 10, top 15 player. Soto is that. I understand that trades and things could happen overnight about who becomes available, but if the Mets don't land Soto, You have to think maybe not that they'll be a value driven, component driven team, but you're not going to have access to that kind of player to potentially build out your, at least your offense around for the next few years. I mean, I looked at the free agent market, so I don't want to say it's Soto or bust, but I could see a scenario where Soto is one path and then the Mets don't take a way different path. But I think the fans might be a little disappointed. It's not like they're going to go to the next tier and let's just splurge on whoever. I wonder your thoughts on that, because this is it. Like, unless I'm missing something, no one like Soto's coming available in the next couple, you know, 2-3 years or so.
Yeah, I think you're right there. If they do not land Juan Soto, there will clearly be a lot of disappointment, I feel like, from the fan base, and rightfully so. There's only one guy like him, and he's going to just choose one team. So there's a decent chance that there's a lot of people who are going to be very frustrated and upset when he makes a decision. So yeah, that's really the big question as to like where they go from there if they miss out on Juan Soto. Obviously, they have Pete Alonso in the free agent market, so that would be a sensible sort of next, I don't want to say pivot, but just a next thing on their agenda, depending on how the timing lines up for all these things. Obviously, Pete Alonso could end up going first, for that matter. I don't know. But just in terms of like the available players who are pretty good players who are still out there, that makes sense for them. There isn't like that superstar to fall back on, and there isn't like a superstar in the next couple of free agent markets that is set to hit free agency. They could also make a trade. I think some guys like Robert from the White Sox, that guy could make some sense on some level if you're looking for outfield help. There's always things that they could do between now and a couple of years. So it wouldn't be like a sense of like, wow, this team is going to take a step back by any means, but definitely there'll be some disappointment if they don't end up getting Soto.
Yeah, and I think the more, and I've watched the guy, you know he's great. You just watch him. I mean, the way his plate discipline, he's the power. I mean, he's not necessarily a five-tool guy. I don't think he's a gold glover. That one I'm scratching my head a little bit on. But anyway, I went back, and even back to the year 2000, if you do all these different machinations, you search with, you know, one creation war. I mean, the guy's top five in baseball going back to when Barry Bonds, Albert Pujols was still playing. You know, I think, and tell me if I'm overstating it, I mean, the way he had that impact on the Yankees offense, I mean, I know Judge was healthy, but they averaged almost a run more a game with him in the lineup. The Nats, if you look at him even when Harper was there, before he came into the lineup, the whole offense just became better. And look, there's more work to be done. You can't just sign Soto. This isn't the NBA. But I don't think at times, because there are a faction of maybe the fan base that say, you know, this is not what the Mets do. Given a guy a $700 million potential deal, I don't think everybody realized this guy is an elite and may go down in the top five hitters in the history of the game.
Yeah, and you're saying that, and what comes to my mind is the best may be yet to come from him. I mean, the man is only 26 years old, so we could definitely envision those next 7-8 years of his career, at least maybe 4 or 5, maybe even 6 of them being the best. That's a hard thing to top based on what he's already accomplished. So maybe that doesn't work out the way I think it might, but we're talking about the prime years of his career, theoretically speaking, at least, generally speaking, when you look at a player, it's between 26 to 29 years old. And so that's what you're signing him for. And I'm with you. I think that like watching him play up close when he was playing against the Mets and then in the postseason for the Yankees, you know, he's not the best defender, clearly. He's not somebody that's where he makes his mark. He's not somebody that's going to help you on the bases, really. But he carries your lineup. And I think you touched on something interesting in that it's not the NBA where you don't just sign like a star or two. Well, I'd argue that the Yankees got pretty far with that because they didn't do a whole lot. Yeah, they didn't do a whole lot after that trade with the Padres. And I was always thinking to myself, like, wow, they're just going to do this, really? And yes, they went after Yamamoto. They went after some other guys, whatever. And they ended up getting Jazz at the trade deadline. So they boosted their club. But for a while, it was really just Soto. And I was just like, wow, that's all they're going to do. And it worked for a long time. And yes, the AL was down and they beat up on the Central and all that stuff, but they got to the World Series. And so I think if you add him to a team like the Mets that already has, like you said earlier, Francisco Lindor, They have Brandon Nimmo. And by the way, both of those guys are, the linchpins of your franchise right now, and they're not getting any younger. So
Yeah.
I do, you could, not that I have to make the case, but you can make a definitely strong case for Juan Soto and just the pressure on the Mets to land this guy. It's not the same as the Yankees because the Yankees are the team that he just played for. And so there's an immense level of pressure there. But yeah, right after them is the Mets because of just what he could mean for your lineup going forward.
And then, and we have Will Salmon of The Athletic joining us here. Then there's Pete Alonso, and this is the dilemma here. Look, there's not many other hitters on the market that are going to hit home runs like Alonso. Fitz been here, personality. But what's funny, Will, and you were covering the game, obviously. He drops a pop up in game three against Milwaukee. If Diaz doesn't get out of that inning and that gets away from the Mets, we're talking about a whole different situation. I don't even know if I mean the fans would be escorting him out of town at that point. He struggled a little bit with the break, not a little bit, a lot of bit with the breaking pitches over the last couple of years. Not really has developed into the hitter. I thought at one point maybe he could become, as he gets older, Paul Goldschmidt, hit the other way with two strikes, get a little bit more average. He's the last year and a half, 2 years, it's just left you wanting. But I still think that there's something there. Soto plays a lot into this. I think they want Alonso back, but I'm not sure if they want him back at any cost. And I'm not sure right now, unless because of Boris and his magical tongue and his sales pitch and the fact that there is a team that says, "Wow, I could really use that power." I'm curious about how deep other teams will go because, quite honestly, I don't even know if a contract north of what Freddie Freeman or at what Freddie Freeman received is really in the best interest of anybody because we just don't know what Pete Alonso is going to give the Mets or anybody for that matter.
Yeah, the value of first baseman isn't what it used to be back when, Scott Boras had, was it Mark Teixeira and Prince Fielder and those types of monster contracts for big time power hitting first baseman or bat first baseman. That's just not the reality that we live in right now. And I also think that Pete Alonso's value to the Mets is way more than it is to any other club. Like, would he fit the Mariners? Would he be a nice bat for the Red Sox, if whatever they want to do with Cassis or a number of other teams, Baltimore Orioles? Yeah, sure. He'd be a great fit for those clubs. Not in the way that he'd be a great fit for the Mets because you have all that other stuff, just the history, the tied to the franchise, the relationship, what he means to it. I mean, this guy could set not every record, but set a bunch of hitting records as far as the team goes, once he's all said and done here, if he were to re-sign, clearly the home run would be in very much in reach, and there's a few others as well. And so he has the opportunity to really tie his name to Mets lore here over the next few years. But yeah, I kind of had the same sense as you, where it's like it's not a perfect formula for Pete Alonso and the Mets, where it's not just like we're not just multiplying like his value. In terms of like F war or whatever, plus a dollar figure, it's just not that right now. And so I don't know what that exactly means as far as the overall total, like what that grand total looks like at the end of the day. But I do know that I get the impression that they're going to make a strong effort here to make it happen. I'd be surprised if it kind of went south here and they just, washed their hands with it. But that's always a possibility too. I haven't heard a whole lot on what his market is looking like or if there's other teams that have been super aggressive yet, but he's not a perfect player. He's somebody that I think tries very hard defensively and gives it his all, but there's some things that you don't like defensively when he's making some, questionable decisions with the ball at times or he's getting hurried, but he still gives it his all. He still plays every single day. He still is going to be there for you in your lineup. And even in a down season by his measures last year, he still did better than most first basemen. So I
And the
like,
scoops, don't
yeah.
discount the scoops. I didn't realize I knew he was good watching him, but when I saw how good he was in the and that to me, even with Lindor at short, great defensive player, that's huge. I didn't realize he ranked at the top of the sport in that sense.
Yeah, he is, I think, better defensively than people give him credit for. Like I said, he's just not pristine. He is not somebody that's going to be a finalist for a Gold Glove anytime soon, but he's gonna work for it, and I think that unlike some other of these big like burly type first basemen, I kind of give him the benefit of the doubt of staying in shape and continuing to work hard just because that's what he's demonstrated throughout his whole Mets career.
And what's going to be interesting is that, look, you would love to have this team back with a Soto. You were there, the vibes and all the other stuff. But you know, in baseball, chemistry and the vibes and Grimace and OMG, that died on the last out in LA. And not that you want to rip the team apart and start fresh with mercenaries, but how much will, because no one's really talked about it. Stern's not going to talk about it. Will the fact that, hey, when things are push come to shove, do you bring back the guy you know? When it's not that much different. Look, Christian Walker could bring you better defense. And again, I know Soto plays into all this, but when you have the guy, you have the vibes, you have something special that maybe you could build on, like the Cubs did after 2015 when they lost. I wonder how much that comes into play. I know in an analytics world, in a money world, you have to be careful, but I think there's something to that, at least with this group.
Yeah, from covering David Stearns, I know that he puts some stock into makeup when contrary to like what a lot of people view David Stearns as like this cold guy who's just looking at a calculator. That's a huge part of who he is, don't get me wrong, but like there is a sense that he does use makeup, and it reminds me of like when they traded for Willy Adames when he was with the Brewers a few years ago. Makeup had a lot to do with that. Like they did a lot of homework on who he was as a person and what he could bring to their clubhouse, and it ended up working out in a huge way on and off the field. So with last year in that context, I think we have to say to ourselves like that was just that. That was last year, and like it's nice and it may help in some regard. Those guys' individual stories, but it's just I don't know if that's going to be something that's going to be a separator when you're looking at certain positions. For example, like a backup infielder, when you have somebody like Jose Iglesias who has really cashed in, I would say, on what his capabilities are, he's in line for something a little bit better than the role that the Mets had for him initially with like that backup infielder type. I wouldn't be surprised if another team that has more of an opening at second base or shortstop gives him a shot there as a placeholder for whatever top prospect or whatever future plans a club may have. And that would be in his best interest, other than signing, re-signing with the Mets in a backup capacity. And so like I think those are the decisions that they have to make, like Harrison Bader in center field, things like that, where do you bank on somebody staying healthy again? Do you bank on somebody who's a year older, who's already in their 30s, replicating that performance? I think the answer is yes for somebody like Alonso, and it's harder for other guys from last year's group to say to yourself like, okay, we're going to bank on that performance one more time, because you can make the argument that that's why you had signed them last year to those 1 year type deals, is because you weren't really that optimistic about going much further with them for a variety of reasons.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Willy Adames. So there's reports out there the Mets are interested. 7 years, 160 is some of the numbers that have been thrown around as maybe what his value is. Spit and vinegar player, I'm wondering, is he still waiting for Jesse Winker in the parking lot? Because that'll be interesting if they both come back. Great numbers in Milwaukee. A little up and down, a little below league average, a little really good. Strikes out a little bit. Doesn't hit lefties. I was surprised when I looked at his splits. He struggles a little bit against lefties. I wonder what Adames, love to have him part of the fold. I don't know if it's hit. Obviously, he's a little bit different situation if Alonso leaves, but is the future of Vientos at DH and then put him at third? I know he wants to flip around, maybe second base. I was a little surprised the Adames smoke there because I looked at him as, well, that'll be the next tier. Rumor mill is the rumor mill, but you mentioned Adames in character. Your thoughts on the Mets, Adames, and how he fits with different scenarios there?
Yeah, I haven't necessarily heard about those numbers that you mentioned, so I can't say if that's right or wrong. I just personally haven't heard much on that. I think it's also early for those types of things to
Sure,
come out
sure.
as well, but who knows? With Adames, I have a lot of respect for just the way that he carries himself in a clubhouse. I think he won a lot of people over in Milwaukee from the second that he walked in, actually. And he's somebody that really connects with everybody in that room. He's somebody that kind of brings together different corners of a clubhouse as somebody who's bilingual, who has been around the league for a long time at this point, and just has a big personality and a fun guy to be around, and he just enjoys being there. It was interesting because when David Stearns acquired him in Milwaukee, a big reason for that was they wanted somebody who could just make the routine player at shortstop, and they could close their eyes and be like, okay, we know what we're getting out of this. Now, that was a few years ago at this point, so I feel like Adames, as somebody who's going to be entering his 30s for whatever contract he ends up signing, no shortstop wants to move off shortstop, right? Like all these guys, you can remember back to got people listening on this when they were kids. Like shortstop, you don't move off of that. Like there's a
That's
lot
the
of
premium
pride.
position.
Yeah, that there's a lot of pride involved, even at the major league level. We hear that all the time. I will say though that Adames is a team first guy, and if the push came to shove, and if he was not necessarily getting the big offer to be a shortstop somewhere, I could see him definitely switching position, playing third base or second base, whatever it is. And I think he'd be just fine there. And I'd almost argue that he probably would be better off playing third base at this point in his career. But I've only seen him when they played the Mets the handful of times that occurred. And it probably wouldn't be fair for me to say that with any sort of level of, definite, just because I don't watch him every day anymore. Yeah, he is somebody that's he's a really good player, somebody that could help you in a bunch of different ways, and I think eventually he'll bring some versatility as well once he gets old, as he ages.
What's interesting, and for those who may not realize, we'll cover you covered the Brewers for how many years, Will? A couple of years? How many years were
That
you?
was 3 seasons.
3 seasons. So you're a little bit familiar with Stearns and the organization. And I'm looking at, and obviously that's this first week of hot stuff. Everyone's like a kid in a candy store here. Talk to me the first week of January when everything's slowed down. Everyone can't wait for spring training. But you look at the rumors about starting pitching. Michael Wacha signed a contract. Again, we don't really know what Stearns wants to do. And everybody ties him to Corbin Burns. Now, there's debate on Burns and some of the peripherals, and there's been extensive analysis on different sites about the concerns about his decline, the strikeout rates down. Blake Snell, you hear all sorts of things, West Coast guy, he's been up and down. Max Fried has a lot of check engine lights with some small injuries over the last couple of years. With the pitching, I'm of the opinion that right now, with the way this team could be built, the Sean Manaea type is the better way to go. Shorter term deal, albeit more expensive, not getting locked in with $40 to $50 million AAV on a starter. I think Burns will be close to 40 on that. They're going to want 6, 7, 8 years. We just saw them get out from under Verlander and Scherzer and how difficult those big, starting pitching AAVs can be to load your payroll down. I wonder, you hear Garrett Crochet. I'm a little bit concerned about him long range staying healthy and being able to pitch deep into the season. But you also have a lot of these other Nathan Eovaldi types. Do you build a rotation around maybe more of the Sean Manaea types at the top? Maybe you go and get a Crochet depending on the cost. I know Sasaki's out there. He's a whole different conversation. I know you wrote about him over at The Athletic. I'm not so sure that the model of going big at the top of the rotation for at least these guys that are available. I'm not so sure, just A, that Stearns is going to be there because Burns has got that connection. And B, I don't know if that's a smart move. And I've seen some rumblings where executives are wondering, do I stay away from those guys, especially in their late 20s, early 30s, with these long-term deals on pitching?
Yeah, you hit me with a lot of interesting thoughts
Yeah,
there.
I kind of rambled. I'm sorry. It's
No, no worries.
multi-dynamic, the whole thing,
Yeah, no, it's definitely layered. So I'll address a few, and if I miss anything, feel free to bring it back
You
up.
got
But
it.
with yeah, I have a hard time saying to myself that David Stearns will aggressively shop at the top of the pitching market and hand out a 7 to 8 year deal or something like that. I do have a hard time thinking about that. Like I don't necessarily, I don't know if I'd really bet on that happening. It could. I just don't know if that would be what I necessarily put at the top of my prediction list. So I also think though that if it was anybody who was deserving of that type of deal, it would be Corbin Burns, because he's proven to be pretty durable the last few years. And he's kind of had that, he has that different body type. He's not somebody that is frail by any means. He's a thicker type body who really has a strong work ethic and keeps himself in that condition, gets the most out of himself in that way, and he puts himself in line for, 30 plus starts, and it's kind of a throwback in that way, where he prides himself on that and he wants to be out there at this point in his career, especially now that he is into free agency and no longer in the arbitration situation, where he has to protect himself or think about that as far as what it may cost him in free agency. He's here now. And so I think that it's definitely a mindset of he's going to want to pitch 180 plus innings, whatever it is, every single season. But there's just generally speaking, a huge risk when you're doling out those huge contracts for pitchers. There's the idea that they may not be that good for after a couple of years anyway, but also just the idea that they're probably going to get injured, unfortunately. Like that's just
Big
what
time.
we've seen in the sport. And so to expect that this guy's going to stay healthy for 7, 8 years, so and then stay effective. I mean, there's not a whole lot of guys pushing 40 who are that good. Not a whole lot of guys who are pushing the upper 30s who are that good for that matter. Charlie Morton comes to mind as like the rare guy who just continues to do things that others aren't. But even he took a step back recently, right? So
Sure,
he's not the
sure.
same guy he was. And so there's definitely a huge risk. I would prefer to see them. I would prefer to see him shop in that Manaea market. I think he makes a lot of sense to come back on like a 3 or 4 year
You
deal.
think he's sustainable? Is he a fad? I mean, what you're around him, what are your thoughts on him? Because he's an interesting one.
I have conflicting thoughts. I think that anytime you switch your arm angle and aggressively do something totally different than what you're used to me, just from talking with scouts, that puts you in a situation where you're a little bit vulnerable to injury. But on the flip side with him, he is also somebody that has always toyed around with different things, and he knows himself really, really well. And so the idea of experimenting is nothing new to him. He has always done that. He has always fiddled around and tried out different things. And I also think that give him an off season to really hone in on that. And he's probably going to be even more comfortable with those mechanics that he had adjusted mid-season. So I like him. I think that his changes are real. I think that he's a different pitcher than where he was a couple of years ago. The velocity is different. The entire pitch mix is different. The way that he's going after guys is different. He's probably a lot more confident than he's ever been. He's coming off the best season of his career. So yeah, I would be comfortable if I was a baseball executive handing him out that 3 or 4 year deal and thinking that he's probably going to give me out of those seasons probably 2 or 3 good ones. I really think that. And then you just pay him the fourth one because that's just the way it works in free agency, if that's what it comes to for him. And I suspect his market's going to be pretty huge. He's not somebody that's going to be, I know the qualifying offer is there, but he's somebody that's going to be affordable for a lot of those teams that are looking for, that not ace, but that top of the line guy who could help you out, not necessarily as a number one, but definitely a number two in this market. And there are a lot of teams out there. So I think that he makes a lot of sense. And for the Mets specifically, someone like him or someone in the trade market that comes with a couple of years of club control, those would be the avenues that I would see as most sensible for the Mets.
And this Sasaki thing is fascinating. That there's got to be more to him being posted. His team will give peanuts there. He's basically doing what Ohtani did. And who knows? I mean, I think there's a lot of confusion, especially with the fan base. Mets don't have much. I think they have like $300,000 left in international signing money. Whether he's considered 24 or 25 will make a difference. It's truly like a college recruitment. And now you're hearing, well, the Dodgers are a fait accompli. In a lot of ways, with the way the Dodgers, especially with their international component with Ohtani, they remind me of like the Heat with LeBron, or the Lakers when they had Magic Johnson, or the Bulls with Jordan. Like, all of a sudden they become good and everybody wants to find a way to get there, whether it's Tony Kukoc or whatever it may be. I'm dating myself a little bit by NBA references, but there's a part of me that says, and I know that's already been talked about on social media, and it is what it is. Do you even have a shot and waste your time recruiting over there if it's LA is now that destination, like when they used to be this behemoth in South America many, many years ago?
I think you definitely put the time in for a few reasons. And sure, like even if you think that there's probably the strongest likelihood of him ending up in LA to play for the Dodgers, I think you still go after it. Because he's not going to be on the Dodgers forever, first of all. Like, you want to build a relationship or at least present to him well for the next time he is a free agent. And because, like, who's to say that the Dodgers will, sure, strong chance that they will continue to be at the top of the market as far as best run organizations go, but a lot can happen in a few years. And so, like, why not do it? And until he's officially signed there, you theoretically have a shot, and you never know. There's a lot of reasons why people have connected the dots to Sasaki and the Dodgers. Some are obvious, some aren't, but they have. I know some officials there who have been on him, and he has been on their radar since he was in high school. So this dates back a long, long time. I was told yesterday that the Mets are in a decent position for it, just because of the way they presented to Yamamoto, how they've handled Kodai Senga. Word in the Japanese community spreads pretty fast when that happens. Like, when you have a strong reputation there for being there for those players, word goes around, and it becomes something that is taken seriously in that community, and in that culture. So, what that means for his chances, I'm not sure. It obviously is the Dodgers being the industry favorite at this point, but to your point earlier, a lot is going to come into play where it's not just money, and money is a very, as minor as it can get in a big time free agency like this. So it's not as if you're chasing after this guy and you're going to offer him 300 plus million like Yamamoto, where if you weren't in on that and then you're just offering that and wasting your time doing that, that could be a little bit, I think, of a time waster. But here, like, you're not really, it's not a sense where, like, you're going to devote a whole lot of money toward him here. And so I think that it's not going to impact your budget. It's not going to impact other things that you're going to do. So I feel like you might as well go after it and see what's there. And you'll probably know right away after the first meeting or so, if you know what you're doing, whether or not he's serious or genuine about your club or not. And then you could just cut ties with it after that. So I think, like, the initial effort makes sense. And then from there, you just judge. You get the sense of just doing this in the past and having a familiarity with the player, the agent, and just understanding where you stand after that.
Absolutely. Will Salmon of The Athletic joining me. A couple of things before we wrap up. The one big challenge I think Stearns has, and he's built out his front office here, he's starting to build it out. Seems like the Mets finally have that stability that they really haven't had even since Cohen took over. You have names that he mentioned, Mauricio, Beatty, Gilbert, Jett Williams, Brandon Sproat, Blake Tidwell. But especially on the positional side, and then from what reports are, that's what the White Sox would be interested in a crochet trade, but he's got to decide who's a keeper and who's not. I mean, Jett Williams looks like really someone that should be a keeper, but we're all just watching video here. We're watching video, we're looking at numbers. We really don't know. I think that's one of the more fascinating things. There's some Rule 5 decisions he has to make with a Yoander Suarez. What does he think about this system, which he's only been over for a year? He's got new people in the international part of his front office. He's built out internally. That's really, I think, a question. The Mets are well regarded with some of their prospects, but we've also seen guys struggle like Brett Beatty. So I think that's going to be one of the underlying, not talked about things that go on this offseason. Who does he trade? Who's available? Who does he protect? And there's a lot of names there, and I'd be curious where he's going to go.
It's fascinating because I think at the beginning of the year or right before the start of 2024, I thought that David Stearns and a few other Mets officials believed that their farm system was better than they were given credit for in some ways. And a lot of that was because of the boost from the trade deadline the previous year in 2023, where they landed Acuña, they landed Drew Gilbert, they got Ryan Clifford. And so those are still prominent names in the farm system. The problem was that they had so many injuries to position players in their farm system that I think it makes it hard to tell what they have even a year later. Like, what do you think of, like, how could you even make a strong evaluation on somebody you've never seen play every day in the question of Ronnie Mauricio? A lot of his staunchest supporters are no longer in the organization just because of turnover at this point. Like, that guy's been in this organization what feels like forever, and he was on the cusp of actually being a contributor in a big way last year, perhaps. And that just didn't happen because of the injury. And he did not get on the field, and he has not even started baseball activities at this point. So it's been a
Yeah.
slower recovery for him. Jett Williams had a wrist injury that compromised him in a major way at the early in the early portion of the season, and then robbed him some time toward the end. Gilbert had a few had some nagging injuries, and so the list goes on and on. Even players like Vargas, who they acquired from the Marlins in the David Robertson trade, missed some time. So I felt like almost all of their top prospects missed time this year, and so I find it very fascinating, actually, how that plays into it and what you have. The one guy who played a ton was Brett Beatty, but he obviously struggled to the point where they made the switch at third base. He's boosted some versatility. He could play some second base. They feel pretty strongly about that. They don't rule out him playing some left field and seeing some time in the outfield as well. And that kind of thing helps you in the trade market because he's now viewed as somebody who could play a couple of different positions, maybe. And that's huge as far as trade candidacy goes. So if they don't see a spot for him, his value, I would argue, is still relatively high just based on what he's done in the minor leagues as a hitter. And just his enhanced profile now that he could play a little bit more than just third base.
Yeah, and everybody remembers the whole Jared Kelnick situation. He was well-publicized prospect. Here, you don't know. You mentioned Mauricio. You could trade a Mauricio hypothetically. You don't know what you have. Drew Gilbert, even mentioned Jett Williams. This is where you have to really be careful. It's that nuance between hoarding and going for it, because they are in a position where they want to win, especially if they want to bring on a Soto. Now, Kelnick was a top prospect by a lot of accounts in the sport, but there was always rumblings of some issues that they were there, like every prospect at that point. Here, I don't even know if you're at a point where you can make declarations. And it's funny because Devin Williams, another guy that you've covered, his name come up as a possible trade target. And I do think that the Mets need to maybe get a little more certainty at the right there at the top of the bullpen. They want to play value in 6, 7, 8, that's fine. But that's what's going to be interesting, because there could be a guy that they trade or that they don't feel good about now, or feel that it doesn't fit in the near term, that could come back and haunt him. This is a very tricky spot.
Yeah, David Stearns is pretty good at evaluating his own players, and I think that's a huge thing for any baseball executive, is that ability and that skill to know what you have, right? And so, like, you could look at the Christian Yelich trade from the for the Brewers way back when. None of those guys ever panned out. None of those prospects in that package panned out. They're all mostly out of baseball. I think one is actually playing college football right now,
Right.
for a team. So, like, that was a huge one that comes to mind that really demonstrates how good he is at that. Now, he's not perfect. I also remember a trade for Daniel Norris with the Tigers where he dealt Reese Olson, who is now a pretty solid pitcher for the Detroit Tigers and who's somebody who's in their rotation if he's healthy and is looking like he could carve out a decent career for himself. So, he's not perfect. Nobody is, but he's a lot better at it than most. And so, I'm fascinated to see what the injuries and just the missed time does to that calculation for him, because there are, like you said, whether it's the bullpen, whether it's center field, whether it's the rotation, I suspect that they have explored and that they'll continue to explore those paths for upgrades at those positions.
Yeah, because Tyrone Taylor's the center fielder now. I know he just had hernia surgery. I know everybody was down on Bader with the way he hit at the end of the year. I like his defense, especially if you bring Soto in. I wouldn't totally discount Bader, depending on his market. And if you look at the center field market, it's not robust on the free agent situation. That's going to be interesting, because I think Nimmo's not a center fielder. I don't think his health could allow him. I don't think people realize plantar fasciitis, that's not going to go away. He has bulging discs in the neck from an injury a few years ago. There's a lot of things with him that I think would prevent, his arm isn't great either, being a center fielder like he was a couple of years ago. And I think that's another position where I'm not sure the guys on the, I know there's Gilbert in the organization, but I'm not sure the guys in the organization that's the everyday center fielder.
Yeah, I'm with you on Nimmo. I had asked David Stearns that during the GM meetings, just what center field looked like or projected as, and I had assumed that Nimmo would just be left field and maybe occasionally, depending on what type of center fielder they have, spend some time there, similar to what he did just this past year in 2024. And that was pretty much the answer that we got was, he's going to play the majority of time in left field. And I'd also note, in addition to everything you ran down, He had a pretty good offensive year. I know like the batting average wasn't there, but like the stolen bases was a career high for him. I don't think he steals that many bases at all if he's playing center field, just because of how much
Right.
ground he has to cover and how taxing that could be. So I think the full season in left field showed you that there could be some more. I know the injury is there, but assuming that that gets taken care of even slightly, I think that there's more of a dynamic offensive player there based on what he showed. And so, yeah, I think that I like Tyrone Taylor as a player. He's never been given the runway to be a full-time guy in the outfield. And by the way, his entire career, aside from this 2023, the lead decision maker on that was David Stearns.
Right.
So I feel like I don't know if that changes now that he's older and this has been his role his entire career. He's very good at that. He's very good at being a fourth outfielder, but he's never been given the runway, and I suspect there are reasons for that. And so I don't know. It depends on how good you feel about those other guys in the farm
Right.
system, whether it's Acuña's ability to play center field,
Right.
Jed Williams's ability to play center field, plus Gilbert. So I don't know if you see if there's a path where Tyrone Taylor is that placeholder for a while. I think that's risky on a team that wants to be competitive and that wants to build off of what they were able to accomplish last year. And you're probably better served utilizing Taylor as that exceptional depth that he is. But also, like to your point, there's not a whole lot out there in the free agent market aside from Harrison
Right.
Bader. I think that's actually true for next year as well. I
Yeah.
have to double check that.
Yeah.
But
If Bellinger came on the market, it might be different. You
yeah.
know, Stearns is going to play value with some parts of the roster. You did well with that. You already got your backup catcher. He's going to do that with the bullpen. I think it kind of burnt them a little bit. Maybe he had no choice. I don't think you could. The guys like Maton and Stanek, I don't think that they were guys I'd want in the eighth inning. I don't know if you want to do that with the bullpen and center field. I mentioned Devin Williams as a trade candidate. This is all tricky because there's going to be parts of the roster, even though they are the Mets and they have Cohen's money, that you're going to be looking for what he did last year. Who's the next Jose Iglesias? Who's Torrens? Who's Danny Young? Who's, you know, and you made a point about center field, but, you know, there's only so much money they will spend. And you don't want to spend, you know, for Harrison Bader, if it's a luxury tax, double the money because you have no other option.
Yeah, I agree with you on those counts. So I looked at the trade market as a huge thing for the Mets this offseason. I really do. David Stearns enjoys making trades. There are teams out there that have surplus at some of these positions. Like, for instance, the Red Sox have a bunch of outfielders that they could be willing to trade. So I think that that's a really, if you're looking to track something, the trade market to me makes a lot of sense if you're a Mets fan to just look at. And like I mentioned before, with just David Stearns evaluating his own guys, it's worth reminding people just what they did at the trade deadline as well, and who they traded for what they got. I thought that they made out pretty well, and I think if you look at those trades, and maybe the Blackburn one is one I feel different about, even though you still have him for 2 more years theoretically, so that's valuable, but I feel like you do those same trades 10 times out of 10 times if you're looking back on them. Now, we don't know what those prospects are going to be in all these instances, but they were not top prospects. You got a lot of value from those positions for the stretch run. Granted, those guys were free agents at this point, but I still think that like that's worthy also of keeping in mind that he's just really good at that part of his job. And so I would suspect that, like I said earlier, they're going to be pretty aggressive in the market and they're going to explore a bunch of opportunities there. And given, like we talked about, those positions, whether it's the bullpen, the rotation, center field, it's hard to see me like not making it's hard for me to see them not making a deal to address at least one of those spots.
So before I let you go, you want to do any predictions here? What do you think you're going to be covering? Will you be covering a Soto press conference, a big trade? What do you think is coming out? in the next few weeks? Will Pete Alonso be back? You want to throw a couple of Will Salmon predictions, or you're afraid they're going to come back to bite you at some point? I don't like predicting, but it's fun. I mean, and people got
From a purely speculative standpoint.
Yeah, it's all speculation. Yeah. Don't go to the poly market and put money down on what Will Salmon says. If you put down money what I say, then you really got to get your head examined. But there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I feel good like when it comes to reporting in a few weeks, but for like right now, it's still like super early in a lot of these things. So like my gut instinct tells me that somehow Soto ends up back to the Yankees. I think Cohen is going to make a huge run at that, and rightfully so. But I just feel like my gut has always been Yankees on that. I'm not alone there. I think that's a lot of people feel that way, whether it's Mets or Yankees. But I know I've talked about it now a bunch, but I definitely think that they end up trading for help in their starting rotation. That would be my one major prediction there, is that they acquire significant help. And by significant, I mean, even if that's one guy, to me, that's significant. I'm not referring to like an Adrian Hauser type deal. Like I'm talking about somebody that's going to be in their rotation. That would be my major prediction, just because that to me makes the most sense.
Are you in the camp of 80% of the fans who took a silly little poll I threw out there on X that Grimace and OMG is done once the season is over? We will not see. Let's talk about the last thing. Will we see Grimace and OMG again? Will we see Will Salmon with his Grimace doll at some point? And
I don't have one. If I had one, I probably would not bring it out in 2025. But I mean, I just feel like that's last year, right? Like, he did some new stuff, and a lot of that stuff was kind of organic in some ways too. And so, like, when you have a team that's like full of good personalities, other stuff will come about. So like, I think that should be 2024. And that's a big part of what that year will be remembered by. So yeah, I'm in the camp of leaving that in the past.
All right. You got the Athletic baseball night in New York. What are we going to see on the tube soon? Obviously you're going to be doing a lot of coverage. What's coming up for Will Salmon in the next couple of weeks leading into the holidays?
Yeah, I have a couple of appearances on SNY this week and next week. And then before we know it, we're right back at the time for the winter meetings in December. So, yeah, it's definitely a busy time. But like I said earlier, I enjoy this aspect of the job, and I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. We'll have a great Sunday. Thanks for spending some time with us here early. Be well. We'll talk again, my friend.
Of course. Thanks again.
That's Will Salmon. You guys know him from The Athletic. Great stuff. Interesting stuff. All right, let's take a quick break, wrap up your listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. Interesting conversation. Long conversation with Will Salmon of The Athletic. You heard what he predicted. He predicted that Soto stays with the Yankees. The Mets go more on the trade market for pitching. And truly, that's where this offseason is going to be. It's going to be Soto until it's not. And then after that, it'll be a pivot. But I think the Mets have a great shot. I think the relationship between Cohen and Boris is important. I think the Mets have really done what they had to do to sell themselves. We've been talking about that for a year. I've been very open about what the Mets needed to do as a team to sell themselves. And I think that Stearns has a really difficult task. You know, Stearns' task last year was difficult because he was facing the criticisms of the media and the narrative of them taking a step back, and then he trying to learn the organization, trying to manage through the bad contracts or whatever was left of the bad contracts from Scherzer and Verlander and build some kind of competitive team, which he pointed out during the GM meetings, during his conversation with Andy Martino of SNY, that he always thought they were a playoff team. So we know he could build a playoff team with around-the-margin talent, with value-driven acquisitions, with what he has here. Now, he has a number of his own free agents. Who does he bring back? How much do the vibes and the clubhouse chemistry come into play? And with Soto being that big fish, with Soto being that number that's going to emanate the rest of the roster, you already have a $35 million a year shortstop. You could potentially have a $50 million a year right fielder. And then let's say they bring back Alonso for 25, you know, over a third of your payroll's tied up in three offensive players. And you haven't even gotten into building your rotation, building your bullpen, obviously your bench, center field we talked about. So I really think Stearns is going to have to be really crafted with his plan. I think they're going to have to pivot quickly. And when you hear rumors about it being a long off season, well, let's put it this way. It could get long when you're a player and you're sitting around waiting for the first domino, the second domino to drop. I think Soto and how quickly Soto signs, and I would think Soto's going to sign before Christmas. I'm not sure if it'll be during the winter meetings, but I have a feeling he'll sign before Christmas. And then the rest of the league will kind of start to fall along the way. And it's the off-season of Soto. It's the off-season where Boris strikes back, so to speak, and where the Mets try to leverage the 2024 season. And away we go. We've cracked off the cellophane, our first full week of hot stove coverage. The GM meetings is in the bank. The winter meetings is in front of us. So what's next? Continue to give you good content throughout the week. Dive into some of these topics over at the Substack Beyond the Mic newsletter. Love for you to subscribe and join for less than a cost of a cup of coffee, one cup of coffee, depending on where you shop a month. It's really worth it. I mean, I went to Dunkin' Donuts yesterday and paid $4 for a large coffee. I mean, you know, you could get, for a little bit more than that, you get great Talking Mets podcast add-on premium content. So why not? Looking forward to seeing you guys at the Queens Baseball Convention. Don't forget, December 7th, go to the Queens Baseball Convention website. It's queensbaseballconvention.com. Turk Wendell's going to be there. Art Shamsky's there. Greg Jeffries, Ray Knight, Jose Reyes, and then yours truly. And our good friend Anthony Rivera, Subway Deshaies, and other luminaries from the independent media that cover the Mets and other topics there. There's going to be the Baseball Night in New York crew. So we'll see how that goes. It's going to be in Flushing at the Four Points by Sheraton, Farrington Street in Flushing, New York. I'm really excited to be part of the panel. I'm really excited to meet some of you guys if you're going to be there. And then I am planning on doing a Spaces soon. I don't know what that looks like. Obviously, you'd have to follow me on X to find out what the next thing is with the Spaces. And away you go. I'm trying to figure out. I'd like to do a Spaces to get your feedback on the off-season direction, on particularly the pitching situation. Do you guys agree about my philosophy about not shopping in the top end of the aisle with the elite starters? Do you agree with that? I'm a little skeptical and nervous about going after Crochet and the prospect capital. I think it depends on the prospect capital that they have to give up. He's obviously going to need an extension, similar to what the Dodgers did with Glasnow. You're committing a lot to a guy who has an injury history and has not really pitched a hell of a lot or shown that he can pitch not only deep into games but deep into seasons. But right now, with the way the pitching situation is, how expensive it is, that he might actually turn out to be a bargain. So we'll see. Evaluation, talent evaluation, evaluation of his own prospects, evaluation of the market. This is where you pay a guy, an executive like Stearns, $10 million a year, because this is tough. We have all our opinions here. We lay out the blueprint. I just told you, I'd like the Mets to focus and maybe put their money and go a little bit heavier on the Sotos and the Adamases and take a chance on Pete Alonso versus the Snells and the Freeds and the Burns. And, you know, find ways to keep pitchers like the Sean Manias of the world shorter term, 3-4 years, maybe overpay him a million or two. But I feel like those guys you can pivot from if they get hurt or underperform a lot easier than if you sign the Snell or some of the big name fish that are out there at that point. And I'm very curious how he's going to handle the bullpen. I think just doing a value-driven approach like he did last year, I don't think is going to be enough. I think they need to shop a little bit more in the elite aisle, a second closer, whether that be via deal or free agency. Free agency is always my desired methodology, assuming there's no draft pick attached, which it does not look like the relievers have that. Because even if you trade for Devin Williams, I mean, that's going to cost you prospect capital. Yes, you have some Rule 5 draft options that are coming up. The Mets roster is not full of open spots. It's going to have less open spots when they have to put a couple of guys. I think that they may be, and we'll talk about that over Beyond the Mic. There might be a couple of guys they have to put on that roster to protect them from the Rule 5 draft back, you know, when the winter meetings is in play. So you can't keep everybody, but who he keeps, that's going to be interesting. And I think Will made a great point. The injuries in the system and another layer of complexity. So this is going to be a fascinating offseason. I think this might be the best offseason that we're going to experience as those who cover the Mets and root for the Mets. And maybe this is something I'll dive deeper into. It reminds me a little bit, not quite the same, of the 2004-05 offseason when they brought Pedro in and they brought in Carlos Beltran. But it also could, and this is where you have to be careful, it could have some of the tenets of the 91 into 92 offseason when they went after Bobby Bonilla, or they went after some big-name pitchers and hitters like Eddie Murray and Brett Sabrehagen, and made the wrong decisions, and look at that, how that set them back. But are the Mets ready to put their chips to the center of the table? It's not quite like the NBA and the Knicks, who put all their assets out there and got Carl Anthony Towns and Mikal Bridges and decided to go for it after years of building up for it. Baseball's not quite the same, but the Mets are in. Like I said last week, like I've been saying over and over and over and over again, the Mets are in a position where they have to leverage this 2024 season. They have to, for the brand, for the future of the franchise, for the future of players wanting to come here, knowing how challenging it is now with the Dodgers being this preferred destination. You still have the Yankees and the history and the pinstripes. This is a critical offseason for the league and the agents and the players to say, hey, are the Mets serious? Is Cohen as serious? Is Cohen ready to take it to the next level? We know he's rich, but can he recruit? Can he run a functional organization? Can he leverage the Mets and their success in a way that the Wilpons never could, that Frank Cashin in a lot of ways never did? Those are questions that we're going to be looking at over the next few weeks. We're going to have opinions on it. And I thought that Will Salmon and his work at The Athletic and having him on was a great way to go to the next step of what we do here with how we play GM, how we follow the news, and what we do here at the Talking Mets podcast. We set the offseason up with this offseason of Soto. We dived a little deeper into it. I gave you the blueprint of what I, or the direction I would like the team to go. Will give you his opinion. What's yours? Love to hear from you. You know how to get in touch with me. So we're going to wrap it up on that. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets, no G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Sunday. Enjoy your week. Keep checking us out night in and night out over at the newsletter. We'll be back with more Talking Mets podcasts next week. Till then, take care, everybody.